Move to the final case this morning, Turpin v. Horopek. Mr. Dunham.
Yes, Your Honor. My name is Darrell Dunham. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Christy Turpin, and I'm from Carbondale, Illinois. But I was born and raised in Alaska, and last month I was spent a couple weeks in India. If that helps my client in any way, I hope it does.
Home of the Salukis.
That's right. Thank you for noting that, Your Honor.
Also the home of, or at least one of the homes of our chief judge, Alaska, that is.
Oh, well, thank you. Facts are these. My client enrolled in a Ph.D. program at SIU. She completed her coursework. She completed her thesis. She successfully defended her thesis on March 9, 1999.
There was, and I read in this, and there was some indication that her thesis was the subject was not approved. Is that?
I don't know where that comes from, Your Honor, at all. If you look at Exhibit C in the record, the Ph.D. thesis advisor, Professor Dykeman, has written her a memo indicating he has no idea why it is that SIU is not posting this degree. If you look at Exhibit B, you see a letter from Defendant Wilson to my client indicating that there was just some kind of foul-up and they're going to post the Ph.D. degree in the ordinary course of business. And most importantly, you look at Exhibit A, every member of this Ph.D. thesis committee signed off on that oral defense of it, and there was nothing to be done at that point in time other than post the degree. That's where we're at.
Now, I guess more fundamentally, apart from that aspect of it, is that they're sued in their individual capacities. Do you have any claims against the university itself or them in their official capacities?
Your Honor, I've never been sued for malpractice, and after the district court issued its ruling out of an abundance of caution, I filed a complaint in the Court of Claims against SIU. It's the same exact complaint, although I've now named SIU. There are some severe limitations about our ability to get a full recovery in the Court of Claims, and I don't really believe that it belongs in the Court of Claims, but we protected our interest, and we've done that. For instance, she had a job, $160,000 a year, Your Honor. Where is she now? She's in a position where she can't go out and find another position because she doesn't dare put the fact that she's earned a Ph.D. from SIU on her resume, notwithstanding the fact that everybody on her Ph.D. thesis defense committee has signed off on the form. Notwithstanding the fact that we got a letter from Defendant Wilson saying that that was their bad and they should have posted it, she doesn't dare put that on the form because they're going to not confirm it. And so it's cost her $160,000 a year position, Your Honor. And unfortunately, there's a limitation in the Court of Claims of only $100,000 against tort defendants. And she's in a position where she puts on her resume that she worked for McCarthy. And then they're going to call McCarthy and say, well, she's no longer there. Why? And they're going to say, well, because she put on a resume that she had a Ph.D., and we can't confirm it. And so here's my client there just sitting. And I just think, as I point out in the brief, when I took this case on, frankly, I mean, I live in Carbondale. In fact, I used to work at the university. And there's a lot of people dissatisfied with the university, and I found these claims initially to be not, there's a lot of dissatisfied people. Then what she does, my client pulls out the Ph.D. dissertation approval form. Then my client pulls out the letter from Defendant Wilson. Then my client pleads with me to call Professor Dykeman and find out what's going on. And Professor Dykeman says, I don't know why they haven't posted the degree. And they still haven't told us why they haven't posted the degree, certainly not in the pleadings. Now, we have a rule both in the state courts, and I believe it's also a fair representation of where we are in federal court. We've got to go by the complaint. And we're just waiting for the opportunity, urging us to give us the opportunity to take Professor Munchak's deposition, because unfortunately the Court of Claims has stayed their proceedings till we know what's going to happen in this court. And I think that's what this has all been about. I think it's just been an effort to keep myself from being able to ask Professor Munchak some questions. And that's why I think we've had a delay here. Now, when I researched this case, I went across this Vogt case, V-O-G-T, because I think it's highly, highly persuasive. And one of the things that I think that the Vogt case teaches, does it not, that where there is an existing contract, and that's what the facts were, there was an existing contract, and then there is an effort by a state employee to renege on an existing contract, then they cannot plead sovereign immunity. Now, I've looked and I've looked and I've looked, and there are cases, obviously, the Court of Claims Act says the contract cases belong in the Court of Claims, but I have not found one case where there was an acknowledged existing contract between a citizen and the state of Illinois, what was willfully breached by the state employee, where they can plead sovereign and get and allege and have sustained a claim of sovereign immunity. Now, there are lots of cases where there's a situation where the contract was ever formed. There's lots of situations where there's a dispute as to whether the state employee had the authority to enter into the contract. But there's no case out there anywhere other than this Vogt case where there was an existing contract and there was a decision to willfully breach the existing contract by the state of Illinois. It's just not there other than Vogt. And I think, in my opinion, I don't think the court has any choice but to follow that opinion. Now, I was disappointed that for whatever reason the district court chose not to deal with that opinion. Now, the appellees in their brief, they take the position, if I understand it correctly, that, well, what we're really trying to do in count one of our complaint, and that's the Vogt case, what we're trying to do in count one of our case is seek injunctive relief, equitable relief for an existing claim. Now, it is true that there are some cases out there that would suggest that, but I'm reading again from Vogt. This is West Headnote 2 and 3 of the opinion, page 171 of the Illinois Reports. And they cite this biomedical laboratories decision, and they say, and I'm just reading here, while respondents maintain that the instant action amounts to a breach of contract action, the record showed that this is an action to enforce a previously entered into settlement agreement. And we find that the circuit court was the proper forum in which to enforce it. In other words, it is not an attempt to enforce through mandatory injunction an existing claim. That's what's dealt with. They cite the biomedical Illinois Supreme Court case. And they are aware of this. They reject the very argument. The Illinois Court of Appeals, Fifth District, rejects the very argument that the appellants are raising in their brief. And it's been rejected.
You're moving into your rebuttal time. Free to do that. You're free to do that if you want to.
Can I sit down, Your Honor? I thought it was the yellow light or the orange light I was supposed to be looking at.
That's your 3 minutes.
Thank you for pointing that out.
May it please the Court. Uma Chandrasekaran on behalf of the defendant appellees, John Korupchak, David Wilson, and Nancy Munchak. Your Honor, this case squarely belongs in the category of cases of exclusive jurisdiction in the Illinois Court of Claims. This court should affirm the district court's motion to dismiss ruling in favor of the defendants for three reasons. First, Turpin's allegations on their face seek to control the actions of the state. Second, Turpin has not alleged that the defendants acted outside the scope of their employment with the university. Third, any duty that the defendants may have owed to Turpin flowed exclusively from their employment with the university. Before moving to these three reasons, I'd like to address the Vogt case that counsel just spoke of. The equitable relief exception does not apply to this case for several reasons.
Before you get into that, this happened 10 years ago. Did she or did she not get a PhD from Southern Illinois?
The defendant's position is that she did not earn her PhD.
Why?
She didn't complete all of the necessary requirements set forth by her committee, the PhD committee.
She was told by some people that she had.
She was told by some people, but the complaint also alleges and acknowledges that there is a dispute as to whether she, in fact, has a right to this degree. The complaint alleges in 2007 that the defendants and others met and that they discussed her degree, and, in fact, their conclusion was made that she had not completed the requirements for her degree.
What requirements had she not completed?
There were certain revisions to her thesis that had not been completed.
Revisions ordered by the committee?
That's correct, Your Honor. And this dispute really goes to the central reason why the Voight case does not apply here. In Voight, the court applied the equitable relief exception because it concluded that the plaintiff was not litigating a present claim because the complaint of conduct involved a purely ministerial act in the context of a undisputed prior right. In this case, while Turpin argues that she's entitled to her degree, her complaint sets forth allegations that I've just discussed that suggest that this right is actually disputed. Additionally, the Voight case, along with the other equitable relief cases, the biomedical laboratories case, the Hausknecht case, the Ogilvie case, none of these are applicable because they all involve instances where the plaintiffs were only seeking injunctive relief. Here, the plaintiff is also seeking significant monetary damages. Additionally, in each of these cases, the relief sought was prospective in nature. Here, Turpin is seeking to litigate for conduct that's occurred in the past, and she's seeking for her degree to be posted as of 1999. For these reasons, the equitable relief exception does not apply here. Instead, this court should analyze this case, as the district court did, under the factors set forth by the Illinois courts regarding sovereign immunity. And these factors would include whether the allegations seek to control the actions of the state, whether the defendants were acting within the scope of their duty, whether the defendants owed an independent duty beyond their employment with the university.
Counsel, does your argument, I'm looking at, I guess it's Hoffman and Robb are really the two big cases there. Does your argument there lead to the conclusion that the state's the real party in interest here? Is that?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, now if that's true, why isn't the answer not 11th Amendment, just no diversity? Why isn't the answer that states aren't considered citizens for purposes of diversity jurisdiction? There's no diversity. Don't even have to go through this 11th Amendment analysis.
That certainly would be one way to analyze this. So we followed the reasoning of the district court and applied the test that the Illinois courts employ when determining sovereign immunity. But certainly, since this is a action against the state, the 11th Amendment would bar Ms. Turpin's action here.
But the state has waived any type of immunity by permitting action in its court of claims.
Excuse me, Your Honor.
The state cannot and will not raise any type of immunity defense in the court of claims in the state of Illinois here.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. If I'm understanding your question correctly, that Ms. Turpin would be able to bring a suit against the state in the Illinois Court of Claims.
And could give her a declaratory relief or something that would give her an acknowledgement that she earned a PhD as of 1999.
If that's a determination that the Court of Claims were to come to.
And that's within the power of the Court of Claims to grant that kind of relief. They can't give damages or something like that.
The Court of Claims can award monetary damages. Turpin has raised in her brief that she believes that the Court of Claims would not be able to grant her request for injunctive relief. But that really isn't a question that the Illinois courts consider when determining whether sovereign immunity applies. There are numerous cases where the courts have concluded that the Court of Claims is the forum of exclusive jurisdiction, even if a plaintiff is bringing equitable relief or seeking equitable relief.
So she can't come here, she can't go there, can she go to state court?
Well, she can go to the Court of Claims. She's seeking substantial monetary damages.
I see she wants the money. I know she wants the money, and that's fine. She also wants the Ph.D. And is there, I don't know the jurisdictional scheme of the Illinois Court of Claims, but is there some question that she can't get anything but money from the Court of Claims? Can she get an injunction from the Court of Claims? Do you know?
I don't know for sure. I know that there are certain cases that have said that that injunctive relief is not available. However, again, she is asking for monetary relief, and certainly if she completed the requirements that are necessary to get her degree, the university would be willing to post her degree, award her her degree, but she still has not completed the requirements for the university to be able to do so.
The requirements she hasn't completed. Is this revision?
That's correct, Your Honor. It's a revision to her thesis.
Any other requirements she hasn't met?
I believe that is the only revision, an additional requirement that she needs to complete. But she still has not done so, which is why she hasn't been awarded her degree. A determination in this matter would seek to control the actions of the state, because even though Turpin has sued the individuals in their individual capacities, the university is really the party that's going to be liable for any damages. Her first relief that she's seeking, that the university award her her degree, that's a task that can only be accomplished by the university. Therefore, any judgment against the defendants would be, in essence, against the university. Additionally, the monetary damages she's seeking, that would be, again, also paid for by the university.
Does it matter whether it's paid for? Does it matter what the theory is for the liability? In other words, it's the difference between Hoffman and Robb, right? In Hoffman, the liability is based on fraud, false accusations. And in Robb, it's more, you know, negligence or reckless, or they didn't know what they were doing kind of thing. I guess, at this stage, what the plaintiff has pled. But doesn't it really turn on what the plaintiff's pled at this point?
That's correct, Your Honor. But it's not enough for plaintiff to use buzzwords like wanton or illegal. You have to look at what specific conduct is alleged. And in this case, she's alleging that the defendants misrepresented to employers whether she had in fact earned her degree. But the defendants would not have had the authority to even be speaking with these employers about whether she had earned the degrees had they not been employed by the university. I mean, in other words, another way to put it would be these employers would not have contacted these defendants had they not been affiliated with Southern Illinois University. Similarly, the duty involved here, any duty they had to truthfully represent to employers stemmed from their official duties. This is similar to the Robb case that the district court used to base its decision, where the allegations were negligent and reckless misrepresentations against an associate dean. And there they held there was no independent duty because any duty to truthfully represent to these individuals were made in an official capacity. To conclude, the fact that plaintiff has attempted to state her claim as one against three individuals does not negate the fact that this is, in fact, a suit against the state. Therefore, we would ask the court to affirm the district court's ruling.
Thank you, counsel. How much time?
I have a minute and a half. Your Honor, if you look at Exhibit A to the complaint, it's a dissertation approval form. And it specifically talks about dissertation approval, and it's signed by everybody on the committee. Now they're saying, well, she didn't complete her dissertation. Well, then they shouldn't have signed the form. And since we went outside the record a little bit, I'm going to tell you, everybody I've talked to at SRIU say, if you got a problem with this dissertation, you don't sign the form. You don't come back 10 years later and say, there's a problem. It needs changes. You can't do it. And here's what the problem is with regard. It's a Hoffman and Yatt case, Your Honor. What we have here is it's not just some kind of internal dispute within SIU where it's not an employment case. They're calling up. They're responding to phone calls from McCarthy and other employers, and they're saying she hasn't earned her Ph.D., and they knew it. And then they had a meeting in the fall. We did plead that of 2007, and Defendant Korupchak didn't give Exhibit A to the rest of the people on the committee. They didn't know that everybody had signed off on this form. Meanwhile, they're calling McCarthy and saying she didn't earn her Ph.D. This is tort. This is intentional tort. It's not anything other than that. They knew that she earned her Ph.D., and they're telling the world that she didn't.
Before you head back to carbon tech, this dissertation, the topic is the link between vocational rehabilitation counselors who utilize performance technology competencies and the resulting impact upon their consumer outcomes. And I'm sure Judge Keeney understands what that is all about. But can you tell me in English what does her dissertation is about?
I'm not like the gentleman that, if I'm permitted, Your Honor, to go back and take discovery, I will be able to tell you that. But I haven't been permitted to take discovery to any extent in this case. So
it's a great title.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.